Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is lovely to see you here all this morning. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and I serve this joyful, happy congregation. So fun to hear all of you chattering away this morning. And I just want to let you know that we are a welcoming congregation. We welcome everybody. It doesn't matter. You're welcome no matter what your gender is, no matter who you love, no matter what your immigration status. We welcome you no matter if you came here this morning by yourself or if you came with a crowd of people. We welcome you no matter if today you are sad, your heart is broken. And we welcome you if you are feeling the joy of life. I have a couple of announcements. If you are new and visiting us today, you are so welcome. And we have little pieces of paper in the chair there. And if you want to know more about what's happening in our community, and so much happens not on Sunday morning, you can fill those out and start getting announcements about those things. We also, after church today, are going to gather together and begin conversations about how to draw the circle wider in this congregation. It is also the stewardship kickoff, so this is our sort of fun party to think about who we are as we move into the stewardship season. And I have one more announcement. They are going to put up here or downstairs, I'm not sure, a picture of pets. And downstairs after the service, you can sign up to bring your portraits of your beloved pets. And now we are going to have a stewardship moment.
Without leaps of imagination or dreaming, we lose the excitement of possibilities. Dreaming, after all, is a form of planning. Thank you, Gloria Steinem, for that beautiful quote.
Love is a relationship founded on the realization that we are all connected, that everyone matters, that every single person is precious. True love does not stop at feeling. It cannot stop at feeling. Love acts. Alice, former UUA president.
Each generation will reap what the former generation has sown. Chinese proverb.
The goal of this stewardship campaign is to have 100% participation.
The goal of this stewardship campaign is $240,000.
We asked each of us to give at a level that feels good and right and represents our commitment to this congregation.
I had suggested to Uwe that the motto for this year's stewardship drive be, I upped my pledge, so up yours. Seriously, I love this year's actual theme of draw the circle wide. It's a message that resonates with me and with the needs of the community. It's a fitting counterpoint to the calls of certain politicians and religious groups to exclude others not like themselves. Our message of inclusivity is clearly being positively received. Note our full sanctuary and the overflowing parking lot week after week. We need to be ready to meet the challenges of the moment head on, with resolve and with all the forces we can muster. If we rise to the occasion as UUs have done so often in the past, our collective efforts will be a part of what holds our community and our country together. and there are many who will join us in that effort. But this won't happen if we stay still and rest on our laurels. It requires a strong congregation, strong in purpose, strong in leadership, and strong in financial capabilities. This is one of the reasons I'm a big supporter of the stewardship drive this year, and I'm heeding the request to raise my pledge by double digits. I can't think of an organization in our area that will do more to lead us toward a brighter future. We can and must draw the circle wide and draw it wider still together.
Well, it seems to me, it is utterly unimportant for me to give my sermon this morning. There you are. Right now we're going to greet each other, and I would like you to say something that matters to you about WOOF. What matters? And I'd like you to share with at least three people and someone you don't know. You may greet one another. Obviously, but the most daring thing is to create stable communities in which the terrible disease of loneliness can be cured. Young, old, or in between, let us be daring together. Let us dare to create a community that will outlast us all, that will heal us all of the last lesion of loneliness. May we light this chalice, the warmth of our hearts. Welcome all, those who dare, those who dream, those who hurt, those who hope. Let us say our affirmation together.
Let us learn our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is honest. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and
I'm Christine Leffler, your lay leader today. I'm so pleased to be here. And I have a reading for you from Reverend Andrew C. Kennedy. We come to love a church, the traditions, the history, and especially the people associated with it. And through those people, young and old, known and unknown, we reach out, both backwards in history and forward to the future, to link together the generations in this imperfect but blessed community of memory and hope.
I would like to offer the children to come up, but we don't have room for that. So I will just announce a story, which is called Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch, which is a Valentine's story, a little late, and it is one of my all-time favorite books. It is by Eileen Spinelli. Do I have my... I do. All right, this thing. Very important. It is by Eileen Spinelli, and the pictures are by Paul Yellowitz. Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch. Mr. Hatch was tall and thin, and he did not smile. Every morning he would leave his house and walk to the shoelace factory where he worked. At lunchtime, he sat in the courtyard eating his cheese and mustard sandwich. After work, he would make two stops, at the newsstand to get his paper and at the grocery store to buy a fresh turkey wing for supper. After supper, he read the paper and went to bed early. One Saturday, Mr. Hatch stepped onto the porch with his dustpan and broom, and he got a surprise, a package. He had never spoken to the postman before. "Thank you, Mr. Goober," he said. Mr. Goober smiled. "You are welcome." Mr. Hatch tore the brown paper off. There was a heart-shaped box filled with candy and a little card that said, "Somebody loves you." Only then did he remember this was Valentine's Day. Mr. Hatch wondered and wondered. Now who would send this to me? He had no friends, and yet someone had sent him a Valentine. Who? He put the box on the coffee table and tried to do some dusting, but every time he left the room, he had to keep peeking to see if the box was still there. He dusted, and the dust cloth seemed to whisper, "Somebody loves you." At last he exclaimed, "Why, I have a secret admirer." And then he did something he hadn't done in a long time. He changed his shirt. He splashed aftershave on his face and put on a yellow tie. He went for a walk. He thought, maybe I will meet the person who sent me the candy. No one had ever seen Mr. Hatch wearing a tie or smelling of aftershave or smiling. He got a lot of attention. Miss Weed tripped over her dog. Miss Dunworthy nearly fell off his ladder. And little Tina Fey spilled all the toys out of her wagon. And Mr. Hatch waved to them all. On Monday at lunchtime, Mr. Hatch sat in the middle of the cafeteria. He spoke to everyone and passed out chocolates from his heart box. On the way home, he stopped at the newsstand. Mr. Smith handed him the newspaper. "I think I'll have a pack of mints," said Mr. Hatch. Mr. Smith was shocked. "Was that you speaking, Mr. Hatch?" "Indeed it was," said Mr. Hatch. "And if you don't mind me saying so, Mr. Smith, you don't look very well today." Mr. Smith recovered from his shock to reply, "You're right. I don't feel very well. I was supposed to go to the doctor's, but the stand has been so busy I haven't had time." Mr. Hatch smiled. "Well, I'll be happy to watch the stand for you for a while." Mr. Smith could hardly believe his ears. He would. "Certainly, just show me what to do." And so Mr. Hatch ran the newsstand for an hour. He wondered if any of the people who had stopped had sent him the mysterious Valentine. When Mr. Smith returned, Mr. Hatch stopped at the grocery store. "I'm a little tired of turkey wings," he told Mr. Todd. "I think I'll have a slice of ham." "You look worried," said Mr. Hatch. "I am," said Mr. Todd. "My little girl is late. She hasn't come home from school, and I can't leave the store." "Goodness," said Mr. Hatch. "I will go look for her." And so he walked to school and found Melanie Todd by the swings and brought her home. Thank you," said the grocer. "Anytime," said Mr. Hatch. After supper, Mr. Hatch did not read the paper. He baked brownies instead to share with the people at the shoelace factory. The warm chocolate smell of brownies floated through the neighborhood. Children gathered around Mr. Hatch's house, sniffing the air. "Well, I suppose the factory can wait," said Mr. Hatch, and he brought out two platefuls. "Now, what are brownies without lemonade?" he said, and he stirred up a nice pitcher. When the parents came to gather their children, they had some brownies, too. It turned out to be a picnic in Mr. Hatch's backyard. He dusted off the old harmonica and played songs he remembered from his boyhood. Everyone danced. And so the days and weeks went by. When Mr. Hatch wasn't smiling, he was laughing. And when he wasn't laughing, he was helping someone. And when he wasn't helping someone, he was having a party in his yard. He seemed to have forgotten about finding the person who had sent him a Valentine. Then one afternoon, Mr. Goober, the postman, came to his door. "Come in, Mr. Goober," said Mr. Hatch. "You look upset." "I am upset," he said. "I made a mistake some time ago." Do you? "Yes, Mr. Goober, what is it?" "Do you recall the package I delivered to you on Valentine's Day, I think it was?" "Yes, I believe so," replied Mr. Hatch, beginning to feel uneasy. "I don't suppose you still have it," said Mr. Goober sadly. "As a matter of fact," said Mr. Hatch, "I still have the box. The candy is gone, though." The postman took a deep breath. "I'm afraid I delivered it to the wrong address." It had never occurred to Mr. Hatch to look at the address. He fetched the box and pulled the little white card from his pocket and gave them to the postman. Alone in his living room, Mr. Hatch sighed. "Nobody loved me after all." Then he read the paper and went to bed early. The next morning, Mr. Hatch left his house and walked to the shoelace factory. At lunchtime, he sat in the corner by himself, ate his cheese and mustard sandwich. After work, he stopped for his paper. He did not speak when he ordered his turkey wing. He did not smile, and he did not pat Melanie Todd on the head or bake brownies or have picnics or parties or play his harmonica anymore. Everyone whispered, "What is wrong with Mr. Hatch?" Mr. Goober, the postman, told them. "But we love Mr. Hatch," insisted Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody. "He gave us flowers for our garden." Miss Weed nodded. "I love him too. He saved bones for my dog, Ruffy." Mr. Smith told everyone how Mr. Hatch had watched his newsstand so he could visit the doctor. And Mr. Todd told how Mr. Hatch had found his little girl. All the children in the neighborhood remembered Mrs. Hatch's wonderful brownies and lemonade. "Poor Mr. Hatch," they said. "What can we do?" Then Mr. Goober announced, "I have an idea." On Saturday morning, Mr. Hatch woke to a bright, sunny day. He put on his old overalls and went out to the porch with his dustpan and broom. He couldn't believe his eyes. All over the porch were red and white hearts and pink bows. There were boxes of candy and yellow streamers. And sticking up out of his mailbox was a shining new silver harmonica. The front yard was filled with people, happy, smiling people. They were holding a huge sign. It said, "Everybody loves Mr. Hatch." Mr. Hatch dabbed a tear with his handkerchief. "I do believe," he sniffed, "somebody loves me after all." And then he smiled, and then he laughed, and hurried down to be with his friends. Mm. Let us now sing our children to their classes. So much to be grateful for, and at the top of my list this week is all the sunshine. It was amazing to walk in it, to feel it on my face, to see the daffodils almost ready to bloom in my garden. There is so much to be grateful for in this room. Look around at your friends and your future friends. Life is so much richer for the time spent here, for the people here, for the many programs here, and for the love and acceptance here, for Tracy's sermons, which give us so much to think about, for the beautiful music from our talented singers and musicians. And if you stay after the service, there is lunch and time for lending your voice in the shaping of our collective future. Can the ushers please come forward? Gifts and the gifts of your presence today. The world is full of so much joy, so much wonder. The sunlight, the little buds on the branches, our love with each other, children. And we hold that joy in this community, always. There's also so much suffering in the world, so much pain of illness, of broken relationships, of fear. And we also hold that in this community together. And we have a tradition of coming up and putting a stone in the water. And the water and the bowl represent this community, and the stone is whatever is on your heart. And so we ask people to come forward. Christine will let people go by rows. And if you could stand up to let people by instead of let people crowd in front of you as you sit, that would be so welcoming and lovely. And when you come up, if you wish to say a sentence, that would be welcomed. But we do ask people to keep it a little bit short so we have time for everyone.
I had an opportunity to share UUism with two women the other night, and I've never done that before. I wasn't comfortable even when I was an evangelical. Anyway, it felt good to tell them, and their reception was just so cool.
A stone for our dear friend for the passing of Sharon Persich. She was just an amazing woman, and she will be missed.
This place is really cool. First time here. I felt very alone since leaving evangelicalism, and this has been a really cool experience, so thank you.
For my beloved teacher who is making her transition, her name is Julie.
That was for my sister who lives in Nebraska. I discovered she's got cancer.
I put one last stone in for all the joys and sorrows that remain in our heart, and all the joys and sorrows for the world beyond us. We will now sing from your seats, Lean on Me.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain.
take a moment to just sit still and breathe with one another. Remember, our breath is the way we are most interconnected with this life, with each other, and all the living things around us. We share our breath.
By Margie Piercy. Alone, you can fight, you can refuse, you can take whatever revenge you can, but they roll over you. But two people fighting, back to back, can cut through a mob. A snake dancing file can break a cordon. An army can meet an army. Two people can keep each other sane, can give support, conviction, love, massage, hope, and sex. Three people are a delegation, a committee, a wedge. With four, you can play bridge and start an organization. With six, you can rent a whole house, eat pie for dinner with no leftovers, and hold a fundraising party. A dozen can make a demonstration. 100 fill a hall. 1,000 have solidarity in your own newsletter. 10,000 power in your own paper. 100,000 your own media. 10 million your own country. It goes on one at a time, and it starts when you care to act. It starts when you do. And it starts when you do it again and they say no. And it starts when you say we and know who you mean. And each day you mean one more.
Thank you. circle wide.
Such a joy to serve WOOF this year. It feels like we have burst into spring after the long recovery of the pandemic and its aftermath. We were all so exhausted and cautious for a while. Now I see new life everywhere. I see us drawing the circle wide. Many of us have arrived here recently seeking community, seeking sanctuary of those who center love and trust rather than the hate, fear, and lies that seem to have overtaken our country. 19 people are joining this congregation this month. Affinity groups and chalice groups are overflowing. Kids in RE have doubled. We don't have enough seats in the sanctuary, which is clearly obvious. I arrive at coffee hour and listen to the buzz of chatter and watch the children weaving in and out of the adults. They are comfortable knowing this is a safe and welcoming place for them to grow up. This is the congregation I always dreamed of serving. I am taking a class with other ministers right now where we're working to improve our leadership skills. Ministers are always learning. And we bring case studies from our congregations about difficult things, and we discuss ways to approach them. And I find myself struggling this year to find case studies. And what I do write about are pretty straightforward compared to some of the struggles in other congregations. And I am always unbelievably grateful. This week, as you heard during Joys and Sorrows, we lost one of our elders in this congregation, Sharon Fershich. She joined in the 1970s and worked tirelessly and wisely for 50 years making this congregation happen. As her illness progressed, she kept showing up. And one of her last acts was helping the weekly grounds work party wrestling to prune down an overgrown bush. Over the last years, we have lost most of our elders, people who came in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. One, Helen Pratt, had helped start the congregation in 1955. The founders were a group of young people, people in their 20s and 30s with lots of kids. They started this congregation from scratch, renting places, keeping materials for worship and religious education in the trunks of their cars. They spent hours building and remodeling these buildings. They started an early education program for poor young children in this neighborhood, and it later became a Head Start program. They worked for women's rights and black rights. They played and enjoyed each other and nature. They wanted this congregation for themselves and their children, but they also wanted it for us, the people who came after. They wanted their congregation they loved to last. And it is. Here we are, thinking and exploring, deepening our spiritual sustenance, and working to improve the lives of others by widening our circle and working in the public square. One thing I find miraculous about Unitarian Universalist congregation is how it is the people of the congregation who make the congregation happen. Yes, we have a tradition with historical and theological roots. We have access to resources through the Unitarian Universalist Association, such as curriculum, hymnals, a voice at the national level, support when we need it, and other things. But we do not have a denomination with a hierarchy that creates and oversees congregation and insists on a particular theological or ideological stances from their members. Instead, a UU congregation creates the congregation it wants, and that is you. You make sure WOOF has well-kept buildings and grounds, Sunday services, coffee afterwards, social events, affinity groups, religious education for both kids and adults, and social justice programs. You create a board who makes decisions, a finance team who oversees our money, a hospitality team that welcomes people, and so many more things. You do most of the work to make WOOF happen, and you pay for everything. Yes, I am here offering leadership and knowledge and experience. WOOF has staff who do many parts of making WOOF happen, but you hired us so you could better live your mission and your vision. You are carrying this congregation forward just like the founders did, and the next generation helped them carry it, and now it has been passed to us. In a consumer culture, we learn how to use money to have others meet our needs for things and services. We expect to get what we want, how we want it. Our satisfaction with the other's product or service is very critical to our experience. Creating a congregation is entirely different. It is deciding to put your life energy, which is time and money and talents, into an organization that you make happen because it is important. WOOF is a collaborative project where no one gets everything they want, and personal satisfaction is only one part of what is important. Instead, this creation is about collaborating, compromising, and making something larger than any one of our individual selves. What we do is radical and countercultural. WOOF comes from our imagination, skills, time, and money. We can look around and say, we did this. It is rare in our society to have such experiences. Unitarian Universalists are at their best when we keep opening the circle wider to those who arrive at our doors. We welcome and include the stranger who wants to belong to a thriving community and to ground themselves in what really matters. When we are at our best, we remind those who have felt themselves outside the circle of love, like Mr. Hatch, that they are, in fact, inside the circle of love. And we may also discover that we ourselves are also in the circle of love. calming the voices that say we must reach some kind of perfection to be acceptable. We are all a bit like Mr. Hatch. When we know we are loved, we can open up and share our gifts and receive the gifts of others. People ask me often, what do I do now when all the work over the last 100 years by progressives, liberals, and old school conservatives is being dismantled in the matter of weeks? One essential and important thing to do is to create places where diverse people can belong. And so we can find the courage to act the values of our faith, centering love and justice for all. We say this very well in our mission, in our vision statement. We strive to be an interconnected, diverse, supportive, and loving community. We grow spiritually, intellectually, and ethically by learning and serving together. We promote justice and compassion at WOOF, in Portland, and beyond. Our tranquil buildings and forested wildlife habitat are accessible to all, welcoming anyone who seeks a safe, warm, and inspiring Unitarian Universalist home. Today is the kickoff of our stewardship drive. If you are new to church, or maybe just Unitarian Universalism, the word stewardship means to care for something. A stewardship drive is when people in the congregation make commitments to care for the congregation. The typical emphasis is on financial commitments. People are asked to make a commitment to what they will give financially to help with the ongoing creation of the congregation for the fiscal year July 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2026. And just a note, if you are newer to the congregation and would like to make a financial commitment from now until June 30th, that is a separate process, and you can speak to our administrator, Jen. The reason we go through this process is to create a budget for the following year. This year, the board and stewardship team are asking for increased commitments to raise $24,000 in pledges, up from $212,000 in pledges last year. One reason, which you know, is that every single thing costs more, which is just seriously hard on all of us. But the main reason we are asking you to commit more of your precious life energy in terms of money and or time is so that we can truly live out our mission and our vision. This means drawing WOOF's circle wider to include everyone who wants and needs to be in our circle of love, care, and justice. You can just look around and see we don't have enough room. You can get here pretty much on time and not have a place to park. And this is really uncomfortable. Some visitors do not return because of that. And some older members are staying home, finding the crowding really difficult. But this is also something to be glad about. All the commitments from people who made this congregation happen for years was worth it for this moment when we need each other more than ever. They would be so glad. We are in times of change throughout the world and in this congregation, and all of it is at best very uncomfortable. And at worst, well, I don't have to tell any of you that. But right now, everyone is called to move out of our comfort zones. We need to act in ways we haven't before, and that's really hard and uncomfortable, and pretty much we don't want to. For some people, that means just showing up here. For others, it means changing how we do WOOF. And for many, it means protecting, serving, and acting in ways in our community we never have before to keep people safe and to live our vision of a kind society. Widening of the circle means we will probably need two services next year and possibly have part of us meet in Forest Hall each week until then. Further out, it could mean remodeling and adding on to our building. All of this means increasing staff time and time commitments from you to make it happen. People often ask me, so what should I give financially? What is the right amount? Capitalist society is obsessed with money. And at the same time, we've been trained that talking about money is embarrassing and wrong. It's a little odd. So you use often say, so give what you like, what feels good, which sometimes I don't think is a completely helpful guideline. Over the years, I've come to believe in the spiritual practice of tithing. It is a helpful way to think about giving. Tithing means giving away 10% of your income. This was the teaching in the Old Testament. The idea was that we only earn what we do through grace and gifts. It is the idea that we are utterly dependent on the earth and on other human beings and on life itself. And giving is actually our gratitude for all of it. Giving away is to pass on what we receive to care, what we receive to care for the world that cares for us, and to care for the world that matters to us. The idea of tithing seems so old-fashioned to most UUs and rather controlling. I mean, no one should tell us what to do with our money, especially a church or a religious community. And I completely agree. No one should tell us what to do with our money. But the idea of tithing, giving from gratitude, is more a spiritual discipline that focuses our priorities on what matters versus spending on what we want. All that said, I don't tithe. I would like to, and I have worked up to 5%. It is a work in progress, and it does mean giving up some things that I might like. But other things, like food and heat, I'm not really willing to give up. And I also don't want to give up going to plays or traveling with my kids. Still, I do want giving to be more of a priority in my life, because being a giving person is one way I can experience the interconnected with a loving world and life. And so I slowly each year work to increase the amount. I give 2.5% to WOOF because I am a co-creator here, and the rest to organizations that help suffering people and those who try to create the world I dream of. When I had a very young family and my husband and I had very little money, giving $5 a month was fairly sacrificial. And it is what I did, which was fine and appropriate. Sometimes financial giving is simply out of the question. So we co-create with other forms of our life energy, our time and our talent. And other times we have no life energy of any kind to give, either time or money, because we are ill or have a young family and are working as hard as we can to keep it together, or we work two jobs and have nothing to spare. These things happen. And then we can just accept the grace and welcome of this community. And that is okay. It's all okay, because that's who we are. When we can, though, giving can be a beautiful life and affirming practice. It is actually taught in nearly every religious tradition. Buddha even said that giving is the first and most important practice, not meditation. If you'd like science to be more of your guide than religious traditions, study after study shows that people who give their time and money are happier, and have more meaning and purpose. We can grow generosity as our own practice at a pace that works for us. You should be really proud of what you have created here. This is truly a place of welcome, a place to grow our hearts, heal our wounds, learn the skills of beloved community, and grow the courage to do the hard and uncomfortable things. We give not because somebody says we have to, because WOOF matters, because our vision matters, because next to you and those who aren't here yet need this place, and because the people of the future need us. We give to grow the circle wider. So after this service, you will have the chance to do the work of co-creation. You will have the opportunity to be with others and have conversations about what it means to grow the circle wide. If you've been coming here for just a short time, you are welcome as well. You have important perspectives that people who have been here for decades simply don't have, and we need those. And we also need the perspectives of people who have been here a long time to help us see the history and tradition of this congregation. Those of us who have been in conversations about how to grow the circle wide certainly have ideas about what we should do. But we don't have it all figured out because it is really challenging, and we need all of everyone's creative ideas. It takes money and time to grow the circle wider, and I want to let you know we start the stewardship drive today, but some people have already given their contributions, and we're 34% on the way to $240,000. $80,000 has already been pledged. So we need that money, and we need time and skill to grow the circle wider. But it also takes our hearts and our minds. So grab some lunch and join the conversation. First, let us sing about our forest home. This is Our Home, written by Kira Margill.
In this forest we can feel safe. In
there will be an online conversation, and you can click on the link that came for your order with your order of service. So now we will stay seated for Carry the Flame. This is the video that we used during the pandemic. Forth into this day, remembering the warmth and love of this community. Take them with you.